We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. It's been another uneventful day in Hornets news. Nothing much has happened at all, Michael. I mean, have you heard anything that matters right now?
No, but I was watching the A-team most of the day. Very, very annoying villain in that movie. Continuously points his gun at A-team members, could shoot them whenever he wants, but just wants to talk about his plan and just ultimate villain mistakes. So that's what I've been doing today. Why, did anything go down?
No, I mean, there's something about Ryan Anderson being signed and traded for. But, you know, it's just rumors.
Oh, so you can do a sign and trade with the restricted free agent.
Well, that's what it seems to be. It seems to be the case, unlike certain institutions who claim otherwise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad
so
that's straight. No.
Yeah, so Ryan Anderson, two major things to talk about. Eric Gordon's statements to the press, what he's been doing with the Olympic squad, just in general, there's a lot of stuff to talk about there. And then, of course, Ryan Anderson. We have a new Hornet. He was signed and traded with Orlando for a deal amounting to about $9 million a year over 4 years, is estimated between $34 and $36 million. And in order for the Hornets to get their hands on him, they had to trade Gustavo Ayon to Orlando.
Yeah, who, again, just another acquisition from Dell that kind of goes under the radar. I mean, the way that it looks is that the Hornets were going to offer Ryan Anderson a sheet. It looked like the Hornets and the Kings were the two players that were going after Ryan Anderson. The Magic didn't want to lose Anderson for nothing. You know, they looked at the Hornets roster and thought Ayon would be good enough compensation so we don't have to worry about the Magic matching or perhaps the Magic moving him to another team. Gustavo was a guy that Dell took a chance on when pretty much no other GM would, got a solid year out of him, and now in part locks up the Ryan Anderson acquisition for him. It's just, you know, another move that goes in the A column, you know, for me, for Dell Demps.
So, I mean, those of you who listen to the podcast, you know I love Goose. There is very little in basketball that I enjoy more than a passing big man who knows how to do touch passes from a position in a post to get easy baskets for his teammates. And I'm going to miss that a lot. But Goose is 27. He looked tired for a lot of the year. I'm not sure he was going to be a lot better than what we saw. For a while during the year, I was thinking, well, he might have the potential to be like a borderline starting power forward. Still, maybe he could become that, but I'm not as sold. So for me, trading a possible borderline 27-year-old starting power forward for a already proven starting power forward who's 24, take that trade any day.
Yeah.
Even at a $7 million discrepancy in salary.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that, as we've always said, I think Dell Demps could find the next Gustavo Ayon or something close to that. A guy like Ryan Anderson isn't going to get picked up out of the D-League or isn't going to be stolen, you know, from another team and developed. And again, you're right with the age. Gustavo's 27. Ryan Anderson right now is the same age that Jason Smith was when the Hornets acquired him. He's only 24 years old. We've seen Dell take a guy in Jason Smith and grow his game leaps and bounds. You know, what would you say? Jason Smith's gotten 250% better since in these last 2 years, 300%. I don't know.
Yeah, he's gone from elite fifth to elite third, right?
So, I mean, this idea, I mean, if we get the exact same Ryan Anderson that the Magic got last year for the next 4 years, I'll be happy, but I'm not capping his ceiling at that. Right. You know, I still think he could get better. I've spent the majority of the day going through his Synergy stats and watching his Synergy Sports videos, and you know, I know this is a guy that you've had a love affair with just numbers-wise, but outside of the numbers, his game really does fit my eye test as well. I just like so many things about him.
Right. So, I mean, for those of you who don't know, Ryan Anderson has some of the best true shooting percentages of any basketball power forward, really any basketball player. I mean, I think it's like 59% last year. Mm-hmm. It's because the shots he takes. He takes 6.2 or something like that, 3-pointers a game. And he hits them at a nice 39% clip. He still draws 3 free throws a game and hits them at 87%. He doesn't take bad shots. So if you look at him and you'll see his shooting percentage is 43%, take that with a grain of salt. He's taking half of his shots from 3-point range. So 43% when that's the case. That's pretty good. And a further thing that he does is he is an amazing offensive rebound. And this is the weird thing I don't get about certain players. Like Kevin Love is the same way. How can you make your living at the 3-point line offensively and be a dominant offensive rebounder at the same time? I'm trying to figure this one out because he is the best offensive rebounder on the Orlando Magic. He's better offensive rebounder than Dwight Howard.
Right.
If you take a look at his percentages across the league, if you only count people who actually played more than 10 minutes a game, he comes in 27th across the league.
And he converts really well, too. I mean, he's at the top of the list when it's one thing to get an offensive rebound, but we've seen guys on this team get offensive rebounds and not be able to put them back up, that get their shots blocked, not be able to convert. He actually converts off of those offensive rebounds on a really high rate. And, you know, like I said, I've been going through tons of video. The reason why he does it is the one thing that stands out to you when you watch all the video on Ryan Anderson is he never stops moving. I think people probably have this image, if they haven't watched a lot of them, of, you know, a big tall, soft, let's be honest, white shooter who sits out on the perimeter, and it's not the case at all. So what he does, on Synergy Stats, anybody who hasn't gone on, you could go through every play that Ryan Anderson was involved with this year. You could click on, you know, pick and roll, him as the roll guy, and see a video of every single one in which in that situation he takes a shot. So I'm looking through them, and I'm honestly thinking, okay, this one has to be a mistake because I saw him set the pick, and then he rolled, and they didn't hit him with the pass. But then what happens is the ball gets rotated. Anderson runs to the other side of the floor, sets a pick and a pick, and then pops out for a three and hits that three. I mean, he never stops moving. So the reason he gets a lot of offensive rebounds is when he's on the strong side of the floor, he's setting picks and he's popping out to three. But when he's not involved directly in the play and he's on the weak side of the floor, he's always moving and always crashing the boards. You will almost never see him stand still if you watch a Magic game. And the thing I love the most is this is especially true in transition. You could find so many transition threes that Anderson hits either trailing behind or running with the ball and setting a pick in a mini transition situation and popping out to three. And he has not a Del Curry type trigger, but one of the quickest triggers I've seen, for a big man.
So, yeah, I mean, the comparison I actually make with him, and it's not entirely fair to him, is Peja Stojakovic, if he was interested in rebounding.
Which Peja, not Sacramento Peja Stojakovic.
No, our Peja Stojakovic, one who sets picks and flares always out to the perimeter and always knows the exact spot to be to receive the pass and create an open shot.
Right.
And who always runs to that spot on the perimeter and transition to be absolutely deadly. Of course, you know, Peja would average like three rebounds a game. So yeah. It's kind of unfair.
Different defender. And also, like you said, he doesn't take a bad shot. I mean, Peja still, even in his late years, would take that high post where he would post up from 20 feet and shoot that turnaround jumper two or three times a game. Anderson doesn't do that, but I would take 24-year-old Ryan Anderson over any version of Peja that we had in New Orleans.
Right. So production-wise, he's actually pretty similar to our old buddy David West. I'm not necessarily in the way he scores, because West had a lot of isolation to his game that Anderson doesn't have. But in results, he's pretty similar to David West. He's a little bit more efficient because he actually floats all the way out to the three-point line. He hits free throws like David West used to do. He's probably about as mobile defensively as David West, which may or may not be a problem depending on how you look at it. But here's the thing. I mean, David West, over the course of his contract with the Hornets, I never once heard anyone ever say, David West is overpaid, or that's a bad contract. David West was always properly paid as far as I was concerned. And basically this deal that we've got with Ryan Anderson is the same sort of deal. I mean, it's not declining, but same average salary per year. So, I'm perfectly satisfied with this acquisition.
I mean, if the reports are true, Jeff Green is about to get more money than this.
Right.
Jeff Green.
Gerald
Wallace, who is on the downside of his prime, not the beginning like Anderson, is getting paid more than this. Jeremy Lin, a guy who has been decent in 17 games in his NBA career in a system that Raymond Felton looked like an all-star in, he's getting close to this money. Goran Dragic, this is the kind of money. Again, if Ryan Anderson just plays as good as he played last year, I think this deal is a bargain. I think it could become an even bigger bargain if he plays better, which I fully expect him to. But I think you know what's coming. You don't look at our Twitter feed, at least what the feedback is. You
Correct.
Had to guess. What do you think the concern is from Hornets fans with regard to signing a power forward in Ryan Anderson?
That we don't have a center and that Anthony Davis isn't going to get as many minutes as they want him to?
Not Anthony Davis, but yeah, we don't have a center. So before I go on my, I haven't heard from you. How would you address that question, or what do you think Dell's philosophy is in? I mean, this was a market that had centers in Hibbert, McGee, Brook Lopez, Robin Lopez. There were some centers out there. it looks like he's throwing, you know, this is probably going to be the Hornets' biggest free agent acquisition, and it's a guy who, you know, according to the program, is a power forward. What would you think Dell's philosophy is in making this move?
I think he's just grabbing the best big man available, best big man available on the market for a reasonable price. But I mean, I don't see any reason. So this is one thing I meant to bring up. I compare him to Peja Stojakovic. Ryan Anderson is not a small forward. If someone tells you Ryan Anderson is a small forward, they're idiots.
Yeah,
he has never played small
forward. Never played small forward, played far more minutes at center than he ever played at small forward. If you're going to say he has a second position, his second position is center, not small forward.
Right. And for years, there have been teams that have had plenty of success playing big men who float out to the perimeter and aren't sitting under the basket. Okur comes to mind. The Utah Jazz made the conference finals rolling with a center who liked to shoot threes.
And they had a soft power forward in Boozer, not a defensive game changer like Anthony Davis.
Right. I mean, the whole idea, I mean, in the fourth quarter when things matter offensively, you need to be able to get good shots. And I can't think of a better front court to be attacking a defense in more myriad ways than having Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis out there. And Davis might have a rough year of it, his first year, until he puts on a little bulk. He's going to put on the bulk. I see him as a center. I mean, he will play as a center in the future. So, I mean the comparison that always gets thrown out there is Marcus Camby. What position did Marcus Camby play for his entire career? He played center, and he played center well. And I expect Anthony Davis to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, Kevin Garnett's another one. The Celtics had by far their biggest success with Garnett at center. Duncan is another comparison. Popovich said that Duncan's been their center for the last 13 years.
Yep.
Tyson Chandler again. Yeah, I think it's a little hard for people to, you know, if they keep playing the semantics game of what position a guy is or whatever. Especially after watching this NBA Finals and my belief that this is where the league is heading, I don't think that there's anything wrong come crunch time with Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis as your two biggest guys out on the court. And to me, people worry about the defensive end. I think that, you know, yeah, they could go up against Bynum, but I think it's much easier to double Bynum and rotate off of that if need be than, you know, people don't bring up the other side of the ball when they question whether Davis could play the center. Who's Bynum going to cover between Ryan Anderson, who's going to be popping out on the perimeter, something that Bynum can't keep up with, and Anthony Davis, a guy who will be able to dribble drive past Bynum all day? I just think the bigger mismatch is you know, on the Hornets side of the ball with regard to the fact that they'll be playing Davis and Anderson together. And last point is, I mean, you brought up how good of a free throw shooter Ryan Anderson is. Anthony Davis figures to be a 75-80% free throw shooter. Is there a team you could think of in the league that, you know, won't have to play that substitution game with their dominant big men and could actually leave them out there and actually have those guys as their crunch time free throw shooter? I mean, how big of an advantage is that, especially if Eric Gordon and Austin Rivers are here getting other teams in free throw trouble, in foul trouble? I just think the Hornets' potential to score in a myriad different ways is kind of impressive now.
Yeah. Now, I am going to make one caveat here. And I think I am absolutely thinking that Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson will be a very nice tandem to have on the front lines rolling. But I've got to also say this. Anthony Davis is a rookie this coming year. I fully expect that our front line defense is going to be pretty porous for this next year or maybe even 2 years until they figure out what they're doing together and that Anthony Davis comes into his own. I mean, if you're expecting Anthony Davis to go out there and be able to shut down everything on the floor the first year, Do you think that's going to happen? I don't.
I think he'll affect a lot of shots off the ball, you know, just with his length and make teams more hesitant to go inside. I think, you know, I watched Anthony Davis a lot at Kentucky, and I saw a guy in Patrick Young who will probably be a mid-first-round pick next year out of Florida. I saw him bully Davis around in the post when Davis was an on-ball defender. So I guess it depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about a guy who will chase down a lot of shots in transition, affect a lot of shots off the ball in the half court, I think Davis will do that from day one. If you're talking about, you know, bellying up to Marc Gasol or Andrew Bynum or even Al Horford, guys of that nature, I think he's going to have problems, you know, playing defense against those guys. But I do think he changes, you know, 5, 6, 7 shots a game at minimum.
So the next leap I want to do here. So now we have Anderson, we have Anthony Davis, we've got Jason Smith. It's 3-man big rotation. We don't have a fourth big man unless you want to be generous and say Aminu could play backup power forward for this team. What kind of person would you have the Hornets go out and get now at that backup spot? Would it be just go look in the D-League and find a Darryl Watkins or player of that sort and throw him in there and see if you can turn him into something? Or do you want them to go after some sort of veteran presence like Elton Brand or Eric Dampier or someone like that?
Yeah, I actually think, I mean, Elton Brand, to me, I would put in the amnesty bid if I want him. Great. If not, I'd move on. But to me, this is a guy that we had left for dead, especially after the draft. And now that we've essentially traded a low post power forward for a stretch power forward, I honestly think Carl Landry is more in the mix today than he was 2 days ago. Okay. I mean, especially with the, you know, the Hornets still having his bird rights, they could actually, you know, leave his cap hold on there and utilize that with his cap hold. This is going to get way too complicated, but if the Hornets have his cap hold on there, that would put them over the theoretical line so they could actually re-sign Landry and then bring in a guy for the MLE, whatever. That's too much nerd talk, but I actually think that the right guy could be right under our nose. He's a guy who wants to be here. He's a guy who complements the skill sets. I mean, there is no low post presence on this team right now. You know, kind of gives you that ferocity. I would bring back Carl Landry if I couldn't get Elton Brand. Maybe in either case, I would bring back Carl Landry. And then, yeah, I would get a D-League type of guy or, you know, a Mikey Moore type of guy. Not Mikey Moore. Sorry, Ryan Hollins, somebody like that. No,
not much difference there other than like 10 years of age.
Yeah, I like Ryan Hollins as a fifth big. He could be our new elite fifth big. But,
right.
But I would bring in Carl Landry if he got – I just saw – who was it? Our old boy Brandon Bass got 3 years, $20 million. I actually think Landry gets a little less than that on the market. I haven't seen any real interest in him, so that would actually be the guy I would bring back as my fourth big, and then yeah, a cheap kind of big bulky guy as my fifth big.
So last question about Anderson before we move on.
Wait, you didn't answer that question. Who would you bring in?
Who I bring in? Carl Landry was actually my choice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you beat me to it, so I just kind of assumed
so
everybody
just
knew that.
You ignored me and say, good job, Mike.
You're brilliant. You're the smartest person ever.
Not ever, but close. Okay.
And now I forgot what I was going to say. What was I going to say? Yeah. Well, then we'll move on, I guess. I'll think about it later.
I double whammied you. So okay, so that was, I mean, I think we're giddy today. As I was preparing for this podcast this morning, this was going to kind of be a piss and vinegar podcast. You know, things were looking really bad. I think, you know, by far the big news of the week was this Eric Gordon situation. Joe is out in Vegas, did a great job, you know, getting Eric Gordon what it seemed like, you know, backed into a corner, but he couldn't have been backed into a corner because he was He finished the interview about 10 feet further back than he started it. You know, with Joe's aggressive line of questioning, but you know, you put up a piece. If anybody hasn't read it, if you could just kind of sum up your thoughts from the beginning of this week through, you know, how you feel about the Gordon situation now, and kind of let's have a dialogue about where we see this heading.
So, I mean, I'm going to flat out say this. I think Eric Gordon's statements were stupid. I think they were it was a poor way to express them. And I think he should have let his agent do that kind of statement, because everybody forgives an agent coming out and saying they're not, you know, they don't want to stick around, they want to go somewhere else. No one forgives a player. And I think if he comes back to New Orleans, he's definitely going to have to suffer through some fans that have already basically checked out as fans for him. However, what he did wasn't evil, wasn't terrible. It wasn't even, I mean, it was just self-interested, which, you know, can be considered as bad. It's just not something that I decide I'm going to hate a person over. So essentially Eric Gordon, that interview that you talked about where Jimmy Smith and Joe Garrity were just, you know, they were hitting him with questions, and he clearly was not comfortable with the way he was getting hit with them. And good. I think he deserved to receive some of that. He basically came out and said three different things. One was that he felt he was a max player and he didn't get that from the Hornets. Two, that the Hornets really weren't making any moves. He talked about the fact that they have no big men multiple times. And he talked about the fact that Austin Rivers was picked at his position. And so, I mean, I don't even necessarily have any at least until today, I didn't have any arguments with what he was saying there. And I'm sure he didn't have any insight into the fact they were going after Ryan Anderson, or that Ryan Anderson might be joining this team. All he could make his decisions on were right at that point where the Hornets had not talked to him directly about anything. They had basically done what they should have done, which was let the market set the value. Why offer him your max when somebody else can offer them their max, which is less money? But he's also a guy who's got ego, and he's in his free agency. This is the thing. Everybody talks. You read about these guys who enter free agency, and they're like, "Yeah, I just need to enjoy this process." And all these teams are coming to you, and they're all like, "Oh, you're the best thing in the world. We love you. We want to shower you with money, and we'll take you on the town and show you everything that's wonderful about this city." And the Hornets are just like, "Huh, okay, tell us when you have an offer, and we'll match it."
Right.
That's got to be disappointing.
Yeah, and I've also seen Roy Hibbert in the same situation. I saw, you know, I've seen other restricted free agent. You know, speaking of Ryan Anderson, he went through the same situation. I don't hear anybody else crying. You know, maybe Nick Batum, but Nick Batum was doing this way before, you know, free agency. And that's my thing. Is I guess my main point is, I agree. I never have really disagreed with anything Eric Gordon said as far as whether it's truth or not. It's a maturity and intelligence and just I always feel like, what's the point in saying that type of thing? I mean, for me, it started the first time he was at the CST booth during one of the Hornets games, and the Hornets were really struggling early in the season, and he never had anything positive to say. I just continuously remember him talking about how he's the only guy on the team that could create his own shot. This is why the offense, you know, is having problems. And that just rubbed me the wrong way. Then during Hornets games, he's not at the games. He's on Twitter, obviously not watching Hornets games. He's watching Indiana play and tweeting about that. And all these things are fine to me. If this is my sixth, seventh man, you know, I don't care. It's a business thing at that point where I pay you your money, you produce for me. You know, we're fine. But if we're talking about Eric Gordon being the best player on this team, therefore being the leader of this team, he just brings to me, and I know you can't measure this with stats, so maybe it's not as important to you, but he brings me absolutely no intangibles. If anything, every intangible he brings to the table is negative. And again, you could do that with a guy who, you know, is not your locker room leader, but Dell Demps and Monty can't both preach to me that this is the number one guy, this is the best player on the team, and now I've got two highly impressionable 19-year-olds coming in, supposedly following this guy's lead, who, yeah, maybe he doesn't say anything that's wrong, but everything he says and does is just immature and me first. That's my problem with him. How would you respond to that?
I would respond with that with saying that your best player on your team doesn't have to be your leader. And I don't think Eric Gordon has ever been in the leadership role on any team he's ever been on. I don't think Eric Gordon was a leader on this team last year, and I don't expect him to be a leader on this team next year. I expect him to be the most effective scorer on the team, and I expect the Hornets to get their inspiration and their leadership from other players, like, and I know some people will be banging their head on the desk, Jarrett Jack, Jason Smith, Monty Williams. I don't actually believe that your best player has to be your leader.
Okay. I know you know this because this has been my point since, what, February? That Anthony Davis is going to be the best player on this team. And it's always been the case that that guy, that Kevin Durant comes to Oklahoma City, Seattle at the time, but Oklahoma City, and they trade Ray Allen. They let Rashard Lewis go, and they just essentially let him be the key, the face of the franchise unquestionably, and kind of grow into that role and then bring all the parts in afterwards. I just don't see, I can't see how this works, because Jarrett Jack's not going to be here after next year. You know, Eric Gordon is going to be the best player at least for the next year or two, and will probably always be the best scorer on this team if he's here. I just think that's kind of wishful thinking, and it's a precedent that I can't recall and I don't know of. If you're saying that he's just going to be our best player and lead scorer, but you know, he doesn't need to show any leadership capabilities because somebody else will handle that, I've never seen that work anywhere else. The final four teams I don't know. I've never seen that happen. So I guess you're fine with this kind of guy being around Anthony Davis and Austin Rivers and,
yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not uncomfortable with it. That's how I put it in my post. Was I'm not worried that he's going to check out on the team because if he has to come back. I'm really not that concerned about it. However, I mean, I think we've said this a few times. I didn't say this in my post because my post was trying to make a point, which was give him a break. I want Eric Gordon traded. I don't want him on the team.
And I mean, to go with your whole thing is, I honestly think that you're just a little frustrated at work, and that post was all about vent a little bit. But even to go to, you know, your little analogy that you go to in your post of, well, imagine you're at work and imagine this or that. Okay, well, if I'm at work and I see an Eric Gordon type of guy, a really talented guy who just isn't a leader and, you know, kind of does what he wants, and I'm not gonna work it. I mean, Oklahoma City is such a team. You know, has such a good atmosphere. There's nothing wrong in that. I mean, James Harden is even already talking about signing an extension and maybe taking a discount just because he loves it there so much. I guess to me, maybe I'll grant you that Eric Gordon won't be a negative with the culture of the team and the locker room, but he's not going to be a positive. And when you've got 29 other teams that you're competing against, you need every single thing to go right to win a championship. Everything. And to me, there's no way that Austin Rivers, that Eric Gordon, you know, influences Austin Rivers and Anthony Davis to where they're the absolutely most professional that they could be, and that locker room is the most cohesive it could be. I just can't see that playing out. So maybe I'll grant you that he won't be a huge negative, but there's no way he's going to be a positive that, you know, gets other people, you know, inspired and work their best. And, you know, guys are going to look to him and say, well, if he could throw a hissy fit, then so could I.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from that. But there have been plenty of teams that have relied on other people to be leaders. I mean, the first one that comes to mind is the Shaq-Kobe Lakers. Neither Shaq nor Kobe were the leader of that team. They both thought they were the leader of the team, but Derek Fisher was the one who ran that thing. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you can actually do. You can have veteran presence who actually keep them going the way they need to be. I mean, and yeah, it might take a unique individual to be able to be that kind of person like Derek Fisher was, but there are other teams that have done this as well.
And see, to me, that situation was fine because Shaq was the best player on those teams, and he was the older guy. Anthony Davis is going to be the best player on this Hornets team, and he's going to be the younger guy, and it's going to be so much harder for him to take that mantle. But okay, I mean, maybe you could make it work, but then back to your other thing, you know, Eric Gordon was talking about, well, we don't have any big men.
Mm-hmm.
There are some bad GMs in this league, but are there any GMs in this league worse than the players in this league? Time after time, we see that players just would make the worst. I mean, Darren Williams said that he stayed in New Jersey because they traded for Joe Johnson.
Right.
He thinks he's a good player on a good contract. Players are the worst, you know, evaluators of other players and their talents. I mean, Dwight Howard had this list of guys who he wanted to play with, and almost every person who said that saw that list has said the list is laughable. It involves right. guys like Monte Ellis, who you love, Gerald Wallace. I mean, these are the guys he's dying to play with, Steven Jackson. So, I mean, this is just another red flag to me. Again, no, he's not a bad person. I don't hate him as a person. But Eric Gordon, you know, thinks he's the GM of the Hornets now and that they should have drafted Myers Leonard. I'm sorry, I'll take Austin Rivers and Ryan Anderson over Myers Leonard and I don't know who they could have got as a, you know, Goran Dragic or whatever any day of the week. But Eric Gordon doesn't seem to believe that. He believes he is a better GM than Dell Demps. He probably thinks he'd be a better coach than Monty Williams. I don't want that guy on my team.
You're murdering him, man. You're attributing all kinds of things to him now.
Well, tell me where I'm wrong. I mean, you said it yourself. He's sitting there. I mean, is he not questioning the GM and who he drafted and what moves they're making?
That particular statement, it drives from Austin Rivers, in my opinion. I mean, yeah. There's really two steps. One is Austin Rivers. That clearly bothers him. I don't think there's any question that it bothers him. And honestly, I don't see why it wouldn't bother you. If you were supposed to be the star shooting guard of a team and they drafted a shooting guard, Austin Rivers is not a point guard. I don't care what people say. Austin Rivers can play next to him. Whatever. I mean, Austin Rivers does what Eric Gordon does. So, and as far as ego goes in the NBA, that's a challenge to you. Some people will just be like, oh, I'll crush them, like David Wesley did every single year to every single shooting guard they brought in to take his place, and he wasn't even that good. Eric Gordon saw an opportunity to go somewhere else, and that's what his decision was to be. I mean, you did make one of my points a little bit, though. He's not a very good GM because, I mean, people were scathing about me talking about how, well, Phoenix is making moves because they're actually bringing in players. Well, I mean, yeah, Michael Beasley coming in might be a really stupid thing, but as far as Eric Gordon's concerned, at least they're making movement. One thing that I think everybody should definitely expect will not happen, because I know that I've already seen people commenting on this, trading for Ryan Anderson is not going to make Eric Gordon change his mind now. Because he's made his statement, and now he's against the wall. And when people get pushed against the wall and they don't feel like they have a way out, their position hardens. It doesn't soften.
Yeah.
So he's going to just keep saying the same thing.
I understand. And that's all I'm saying is I think he's a fine person. He's obviously a good basketball player. He just brings me nothing in the positive when it comes to intangibles. At best, he's neutral, and I'm fine with neutral if you are fine being my fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh best player, but I don't want to cater to him. And yeah, I mean, he thinks Michael Beasley and Goran Dragic are good players. I mean, I know he played AAU ball with Michael Beasley. So I'm sure he, you know, he's remembering the Michael Beasley of back then and thinks the guy's a beast and is all excited. And I don't know. I just, personally, I can't imagine that if Oklahoma City somehow had the 10th pick this year and they drafted, you know, a small forward that could really score the ball, you know, who happened to have some of the same, you know, kind of attributes as Kevin Durant. I can't believe that he would be at all worried about. I can't believe any secure, intelligent NBA player would be anything but happy with their team, you know, taking who they felt was the best available player, another score on the court. I just think Eric Gordon, you know, I'm sorry, you're a basketball player. You're not a GM. And I just don't want that from my leader. I don't see Anthony Davis making any statements today saying, wait a minute, they drafted me. I'm a power forward. Why are they signing another power forward? I just don't see how you're trying to sell this as this guy being anything but at best a neutral, but probably a negative as far as the locker room and continuity. But okay.
So this is my take. Right now he's probably a negative. I'm not going to argue that point, but I would not be shocked at all if Eric Gordon ended up being the same sort of presence that David West was in our locker room with Chris Paul. There has always been a sourness to David West, a chip on his shoulder. And he served perfectly fine as one of the team's leaders in that group. He went out and I could see Eric Gordon being the same sort of person. I don't know if he's as tough as David West was. That's the big question. That's why I want him traded, because I'm not sure he's tough enough to play through injury. But I am not going to just say because he had one scenario where he said some stupid stuff and made, after probably being stuck in a situation of groupthink, because you got to remember, this isn't a guy who's hanging out with a whole bunch of different people who have different opinions. He's hanging out with his entourage, who reflects stuff back at him, and he's hanging out with his agent, who spews at him, I hate the Hornets because they didn't offer you more money than you could get somewhere else, because that kills my commission, and you deserve more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's in that situation all the time. So it doesn't surprise me at all that he probably has like a skewed vision of the future, of how things work. And maybe in the end it will make him a negative. I'm just not willing to say that because of these few days, this like few weeks of how he's responded to this situation, that he is going to be a negative for the rest of his Hornets career.
Yeah, and
that said, I hope the Hornets trade him for something good.
Yeah, that's fine. I've already granted that maybe he could be a neutral, even though I'm skeptical, so we're good there. So, all right, so let's get to a couple of things. I know you're eager for me to reveal my conspiracy theory, but
right.
But no, not yet. Let's wait for it. I just want to talk about some of the other things that Eric Gordon said. So what I shake my head at, and the Hornets have been classy through this situation, haven't really thrown Eric Gordon under the bus. Monty Williams actually came out today and had some nice things to say. But yep. One of Gordon's center points was, well, they haven't talked to me at all and let me know how they feel about me. We have pictures of him sitting with Dell Demps at these, you know, at these draft workouts. We know that they've been in contact with each other. I mean, do you really buy that statement? I know he said, well, since July 1st, but Dell and Monty, I mean, essentially Eric Gordon is calling them a liar, because Dell and Monty both have come out and said, we've talked to him. We let him know. We think he's his best player. He's a big part of our future. We want him back, whatever. And then Eric Gordon is pretty much sitting here saying, hey, look, they haven't talked to me. I have no idea what their future plans are. Do you really buy that, or is that part of his propaganda?
I cannot make any judgment on that at all, other than the fact that Gordon has stated they never spoke to him directly after July 1st. Since the free agency period started, he did say they talked to his agent. He said that very clearly. And the only statement I've heard Dell or Monty say at all about Gordon, Monty made a statement that he did call him on Saturday, which of course was yesterday, or 2 days if you're listening to this on Monday. So, I mean, I have no way of saying Eric Gordon's full of crap. So well, for right now, I have to take him at his word that they may not have called him directly.
Well, not that he's full of crap. I could possibly believe that they didn't talk to him between July 1st and the 7th, which again, that is normal that they talk to his agent. But this kind of idea that they haven't let him know any kind of plans that they have. I mean, all these times they talk to Eric Gordon, you buy the fact that they never told him that he was part of the future plans and this was the type of team they were building and that.
Well, so let's say that during the exit interview, they did go to him and say that, okay? What usually happens at that point is the player goes home and you don't talk to people back of the team really at all unless you're trying to use their training facilities. But Eric Gordon lives in Indianapolis. He doesn't. He's not in New Orleans. He doesn't have anything to do with the New Orleans organization, really, unless he's going back for some charity event. So his whole situation, and again, this is me defending him. I have no idea. This could be speculation on my part, too. Maybe he talks to him every day. But essentially, at some point, there was the draft. June 28th, there was a draft. And do you really think that there was time between them picking Austin Rivers, which is the center point of this, picking Austin Rivers on June 28th, and free agency opening, that they called him up and said, don't worry about Austin Rivers, you're the best. Austin Rivers is here just for trade fodder and to be backup point guard or something. I bet they didn't talk to him at all because they were scrambling to move on from the draft to get things in place for free agency. So, and then, of course, free agency hits July 1st, and, you know, 12:01, Houston's on the phone. Phoenix is on the phone. Indiana's on the phone. All of them want to be your pal. And he takes all these calls. They all tell him how wonderful he is. The Hornets aren't on the phone. Your agent mentions they were on the phone with him, maybe, but we don't know when that happened either. I mean, you can definitely see where that Eric Gordon may have had limited communications with the team.
Right, and I could see how an immature person with lack of intelligence of how this process works could take that personally. But okay. Anybody who understands how this process works, I mean, it's not my business. I'm not set to make $58 million, and I understand how this process works. And yet now Eric Gordon is acting like he doesn't, and he's been disrespected when this team is going to be the team that's going to be writing you checks for, you know, for $58 million, and that, you know, if he was a player of this caliber, if I hear the word caliber one more time, I'll go crazy. But if he's a player of this caliber, they should have just – you know, went out and gave him the money that he needed. Like Eric Gordon is going to go to an auction and just offer the max amount of money that he has without trying to get a deal. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. He wouldn't act that same way in his personal life. We all would want to get the best deal possible. That doesn't mean that we disrespect, you know, whatever product it is that we're purchasing. I don't know. I don't see Roy Hibbert doing it. I don't think, you know, the Pacers disrespected him. Now they have a decision to make. And again, my whole point comes back to the fact that I'm terrified that this guy is going to be the guy that 19-year-old Anthony Davis and 19, 20-year-old Austin Rivers are going to be looking up to and, you know, following the lead of. But this brings us to the conspiracy theory.
Right.
So you're sitting here telling me that your belief, and that, you know, if we believe what Eric Gordon says to be true, is that Dell Demps did not get in contact with Eric Gordon over that, in, you know, essentially that entire week. We also have evidence from the words of CP3, Dell Demps, David West, etc., that when Dell Demps came into office, he was very involved with his franchise players, getting their feedback, you know, trying to get an idea of what they wanted to do, talking to them about what the Hornets' plans were, etc. So far, my two premises are correct, right? You wouldn't argue either of those.
No.
So, now we have evidence of a GM who recognizes his franchise guys, keeps them in the loop, and stays in contact with them. We also have that same GM saying, this next guy is my franchise guy. But yet he doesn't act the same way that he did with his previous franchise guys. What I take from that is that Dell Demps gave us a bunch of lip service about how Eric Gordon, you know, is this franchise-type player, a cornerstone-type player, this invaluable asset that the Hornets want to hold on to forever. But in reality, if I'm Dell Demps and I realize he is not worth the money, which you and I, we consider ourselves smart people, other people might disagree, you and I have never thought Eric Gordon is worth this money. Maybe Dell Demps is smart just like us. If he were to concoct a way for him to not pay Eric Gordon that money and build the team a different way, and also not have the fan base hate him for it and actually get behind him, is there any way that he could have done a better job at accomplishing both of those goals simultaneously than doing exactly what he... I'm not asking you if that's what happened. I'm asking you, if that was your goal as Dell Demps, those two goals, is there any possible way that he could accomplish those two goals simultaneously?
No. No, I mean, this is, if his overriding concern is to move Eric for assets, he's in the best situation he could possibly be in right now, except for maybe if, you know, Eric had signed with a different team.
Okay, so you'll at least, you're not agreeing that this is what Demps is doing, but you are agreeing that if him and Monty were in some meeting and said, we don't want to pay this guy, we don't want him back on our team, but we want to maximize our assets and have our fan base actually approve of us having this guy go, this mm-hmm. would have been the best way they could have thought about that.
Absolutely. They would be diabolical masterminds. And I would love to know how they got both Eric Gordon and his agent to cooperate with this.
Because
those kind of guys, they don't typically work together so well.
Yeah, because it, well, I don't know. When I try to figure out what a person's going to do in the future, all I do is look at what they did in the past. And what happened in the past with the same agent is he did the same kind of things when his client was quote-unquote disrespected and got said player to move on. Eric Gordon has also been a baby in the past, you know, with the Clippers disrespecting him. I mean, I don't think it would have been that hard to predict that if I didn't give these two guys exactly what they wanted and bow down to, you know, their every need and request, that they would go out and put me on blast. If that's the way you're saying that my conspiracy theory falls apart, I disagree with that. Again, I don't necessarily believe this is how it went down, but I can't imagine that it would be this hard to pull off if Dell Demps had the same goals as Ryan and Michael. This is how he would have pulled it off.
So, I mean, the reason why I think this is a conspiracy is, I mean, the only way to make Eric Gordon odious enough to be tradable is if Eric Gordon says the words himself. And typically it's agents who take that hit. That's the thing that's the most surprising about this one, that is Eric Gordon saying these things. And Eric Gordon saying those things just comes across as dumb. more than any sort of plan by an agent. I mean,
and again, Dell Williams have been around Eric Gordon for a year. I mean, I know some dumb people in my world. I know exactly how to set them up to make them, you know, appear to the world that they appear to me. I wouldn't bet my life. I mean, whenever it comes down to conspiracy theories, whether or not I believe on it, I ask myself, would I bet my life? No, I wouldn't. But to me, if Dell had the goal of maximizing Gordon, not signing him and getting assets, this would have been the most obvious way to let the situation play out. So I guess we'll see, you know, if he gets traded or not. But to me, if Dell is looking to move Eric Gordon and not have to pay, you know, to overpay him, it's going masterfully right now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like if he wants to trade Eric Gordon, he could not be in a better situation right now than the one he is in. Because I mean, this the anger we've seen everywhere, which a lot of it's justified. I can't even disagree that it's not justified. A lot of it. I mean, there isn't any way I can go about saying that this doesn't make him much easier to move as far as a fan base is concerned.
All right. Well, before we talk about moving him, there is one more conspiracy theory, and this is actually yours.
My conspiracy? I would never
have. And a lot of people on the site and other sites actually believe this, so I'm sure you'll be able to sell this much better than me. Tell me right now, if the Hornets were in playoff contention all year, in your honest opinion, how many games Eric Gordon could have played last year?
So if they were serious about it, I think he could have played at least half the games.
Okay, so this scope that he got was unnecessary.
I think he would have played more games before the scope became necessary, and typically a scope, I mean, we have people playing 2 weeks after a scope. I mean, and he sat out, what, another 2 months after it? I really think that he would have played longer and then had a shorter rehab.
Okay, so then tell me in your great conspiracy theory, did he shut himself down? The Hornets shut him down to tank? It was a mutual decision. I mean, how do you think this all played out?
I think Del Demps went to him, or Monty Williams went to him, or they had the trainer go to him and say, look, we're not playing very well this year, and we're clearly not going to make a run. We only want you to come back if you're 100% comfortable, that your body's telling you everything, that it's telling you that you're in perfect shape. We don't want you to come back on the floor and risk any sort of damage again. We're going to monitor you really closely. So do you feel 100% certain that your knee is in great shape? And of course it's not. I mean, any player who's had a knee surgery is going to have some sort of twinges or something. And so he didn't play. I mean, I can easily see that happening.
Yeah.
I don't think that's some grand conspiracy. That's just the trainer saying, sit out, and Eric Gordon saying, okay.
In his contract year. So right before he's going to have the opportunity to prove he's a max player and get the contract that the Clippers weren't willing to give him, that the Hornets weren't willing. I mean, remember, this is the only evidence he has. Both teams he played for said, sorry, bud, you're not worth the max. Yet he has an opportunity to play even though he's not 100%. He's going to fall in line and say, yeah, you're right, I'm not going to play. I'll risk the $10, $12, $15 million that it might cost me because I can't prove who I am. Because you and the trainer are asking me to, that's your belief.
Has him sitting out affected his value at all?
See, that's such a poor argument because nobody could have predicted that, because even you were saying that you didn't think Gordon was going to get a max deal. Again, my evidence is that two teams talked to him, two teams that knew who the player he was, and both of those teams said, sorry, you're not a max guy. So now you're going to turn around and your argument's going to be, well, it hasn't affected him, hasn't it? You know, there's no way he could have known that. So I just can't fathom this idea that he could have played 30, 35, 40 games. I agree, he could have played at the end of the season. They sat him those last two games. I would put the number, I think he could have maybe played 15 or 20 games this year. But that would be the absolute most for me. So anyway, I just want to go over that for all the people that say he's not really injury prone. The Hornets just sat him out because they wanted to tank this year. I don't buy that at all.
Well, missing half your games and the repetition of previous seasons makes you injury prone.
Well, not to the pro Gordon people. They'll always have an excuse for why he's not as injury prone as we think. But anyway, so now the Hornets are in this position. We joked about it earlier. For those who just read the Times-Picayune but listen to our podcast, it is not true that the Hornets can't sign and trade Gordon. They obviously can. There's basically two options now left on the table with the Suns presenting this offer, you know, as far as trades go. Either the Hornets could be on the phone with the Suns right now saying, you know, we'll just sign him to the contract and then trade him to you. What kind of assets do you want to give us? Just like the Hornets did with the Magic and Ryan Anderson. Or the Hornets could just sit back and say, okay, we're going to match this offer and then look to move Gordon down the line with his approval. So I guess the first question I'll ask you is, we talk about asset grades all the time. I personally think a C asset is an average player on an average salary. I guess under those qualifications, knowing that Eric Gordon is getting a max deal, so that's his salary now, what would be your asset grade on Eric Gordon?
A B. If he was getting a deal smaller, he would be an A. I think he is a phenomenal player, but his injury history combined with that salary makes his grade decline to a B.
Okay.
You disagree?
I was going to say a B plus only because...
He's so generous.
I mean, I think as a player, he's an AA minus. I mean, he is a fringe Olympic player. He's a borderline all-star, and he's younger than most of those guys, so the upside is there. I think as just a pure player, if the LeBrons, the Durants, the Chris Pauls of the world are A pluses, and then you have other guys, and you know, Gordon is somewhere in that A to A minus range. His contract, you know, to me would be a C or a C minus, because it's not that Joe Johnson type of max. It's just, you know, this 14
it's a rookie max.
Yeah, so it's not that bad. So, and to me, the A outweighs the C a little bit because it's so much harder to find a good player. I understand that you have to overpay. So to me, he's a B plus asset. So I guess what I want to do is I want to go through, I mean, the Suns look like the easiest trade partner. The Hornets could just get it over with and won't have all the complications of having to get Eric Gordon's approval, so on and so forth. So I just want to bang out a couple of their assets real quick. If you could just give me a grade, you could give a small explanation if you want to, or just give your, Ryan Schwan cold hard grade, and then just sit there in silence while I awkwardly move on to the next.
Okay.
So, Marcin Gortat.
B plus.
So better than Eric Gordon. You would rather, for the next 2 years, you would rather have Gortat at 2 years and $15 million than Eric Gordon at 2 years and $28 million.
Yes.
Okay.
Marcin Gortat is a top 10 center in the league, and he's paid $7 million a year. That never happens.
Okay. Jared Dudley.
He's making, what, $4
million? 2.5 over the next four. Yeah, every year for the next four.
B minus.
So pretty close.
Maybe C plus. Wait. It's right around there.
Okay. So pretty close, not far. So two Jared Dudleys would be equivalent to an Eric Gordon for you.
Something similar to that, yeah.
Okay. The Lakers 2013 and 2015 picks as one asset.
As one asset combined?
Yeah.
D plus.
Okay. The Phoenix Suns 2013 pick.
that team as constructed with Eric with Gordon? Eric, or without?
Yeah, with Eric Gordon.
Assuming that we've gotten some players out of them, probably a B.
So, okay, almost. And then Kendall Marshall.
Hey, he's a C plus.
Okay, so
C plus. See, now there's one thing that's not. I mean, if you take like what you said before with two Jared Dudleys equals an Eric Gordon, you know, two B minuses equals B. I don't actually think of it that way because the scores get it's almost like Bill Simmons, and I know you read all the stuff. His, you know, dollar, you would never trade a dollar for four quarters kind of thing.
Right.
It's that kind of thing where, you know, like a B is enough of a significant upgrade over a B minus that, you know, two B minuses probably aren't really worth a B. So, does that make sense?
But it sounds like, so let me just go through based on your grades. You would trade Eric Gordon for Gortat straight up.
Probably. Yeah.
It sounds like you would trade Eric Gordon for Jared Dudley and the Suns unprotected pick next year?
Probably. Actually, no, because Jared Dudley being subtracted from that team wouldn't make that Suns pick worth as much.
Jared Dudley, Kendall Marshall, and the 2013 pick?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, to me, this has been...
I'm not demanding a lot of this because I don't want to be loaded down with a whole bunch of salary.
Right, and I mean, to me, Kendall Marshall, if I... Or not Kendall Marshall, Jared Dudley, if I had to rank the top 5 to 10 non-rookie contracts in the NBA, Jared Dudley's on that list. To me, it's extremely impressive.
So would you move Dudley one up, like Dudley and Marshall in the 2013 pick for Eric Gordon? Or do you rank him higher than B+? So, I mean, I don't know what your ranks are. So is Jared Dudley, Kendall Marshall, and a pick equivalent of Eric Gordon?
I don't like, ironically, Kendall Marshall with this Hornets team. I think him and Austin Rivers are just a horrible defensive backcourt, so I actually don't think Marshall's a great fit. But my minimum deal, I mean, I was back and forth with the Phoenix Valley of the Suns people, the True Hoop blog, and my absolute minimum that I would take, you know, I started off shooting for the stars and let them talk me down. And the consensus that their readers and myself came up with that I would be happy with is Jared Dudley and then Phoenix's 2013 and 2014 picks unprotected. And then before somebody steps in and says, well, you can't trade picks in consecutive years, actually you can if you own another team's picks, which Phoenix does now. So that is a trade that could happen under league rules. Eric Gordon for Jared Dudley. And then the 2013 and 2014 Phoenix picks. I think that would be the minimum I would take. If not, I would actually look to take Gordon back and then, you know, move him later down the line.
Right. And honestly, I think that's probably the best choice for the Hornets. I look at Phoenix's roster and I'm not in love with anything there. I expect them to be pretty poor. So, I mean, their picks will be nice, but I don't like gambling on picks. I really don't. So, I mean, Jared Dudley's a nice piece, and he's 26, so he's going to be good for several years. And he fit in wonderfully on this team as a small forward. But I don't have enough else there that I'm just like, wow. I mean, I like Gortat. He's a top 10 center, but he's 28. He's going to stunt the growth of our young players, Anderson and Davis at the moment, because he'll have to play minutes.
Right.
So I would prefer, if the Hornets are going to get rid of Gordon, that they just pick him up, unless they get like a major offer from Phoenix of a bunch of these assets, that they just, you know, match. And then look around at the trade deadline for an actual offer from somebody other than Phoenix, such as Houston, because I'm sure Houston will be absolutely desperate by that point to make some sort of
trade. And remember this, I was working on these trades with this Phoenix people before the Ryan Anderson situation. The Anderson signing changes things a lot for me, but a big reason why I wanted just draft picks from Phoenix back was my exact same philosophy as the Chris Paul to the Clippers trade. I always factored in with that Chris Paul trade that the Hornets would be bad. So that you're upping your own. So in the proposed trade I have to Phoenix, again, I got to get this in one per podcast. This should be part of the drinking game. But these trades aren't made in a vacuum. So to me, trading them to Phoenix for draft picks helps our pick go from, let's say, 12 to 4. And I've factored that in my trade, as opposed to if I go and get, you know, known NBA players for another team, and now, you know, I have the 12th pick. So that was a big part of it for me, is that Phoenix trade would put me on the Oklahoma City path. Because what people, you know, they don't seem to remember is Oklahoma City stayed bad, which helped them get the Westbrooks, the Hardens, etc. But they also just loaded up on picks from other teams. I mean, they traded they took on Kurt Thomas, mm-hmm. and for doing that, they got two first-round picks. They took on Matt Harper and got a first-round pick whose name just happened to be Eric Maynor. They got our whatever. So to me, that Phoenix trade that I proposed would put us ahead of the game because to me, you know, okay, we got Anthony Davis and Austin Rivers. That's our Durant and Jeff Green. Now I'm going to be bad again next year. Plus, I'm going to have picks coming from Phoenix. Plus, I'm going to be able to take on other salaries. But the Ryan Anderson thing kind of changed. I mean, I think Ryan Anderson is a good enough player to where even if the Hornets trade Eric Gordon for Jared Dudley and picks, I don't think they could be as bad as I want them to be next
year. All right.
So that actually changed it a little bit for me. One more thing on Gordon. Let's say the Hornets do match and there's no great offers out there right now. Do you think – I've always felt that NBA players were like cars. Once they sign their contract and get driven off the lot, their value almost automatically goes down.
Right.
Do you think that Eric Gordon, let's say the Hornets do match and always continue to float his name out there, do you think he'll have more value down the road or less? And either way, what is that dependent on?
Well, I mean, it depends on his injuries. I mean, if he sits out half the season again or more, then, yeah, he's going to be worth very little. But, I mean, comparable players. This is how I got to look at it. He could be better than this. We'll see. But Andre Iguodala and Danny Granger, their names are always on the trading block, and their teams always feel they're not being offered enough for them.
Uh-huh.
Always been the case. And I have a feeling Gordon might end up being the same sort of thing. But if you come into it with the idea that you're trading Eric Gordon for whatever assets you can get from another team, you're clearly not valuing him highly anyways. You're not valuing his presence as highly as these teams are. They're not going to fall in love with their own player because already they're already out of love with him. So if all that's the case, I'm not as worried about moving him after the fact. And you could always find somebody out there who's desperate. You could call up the next Brooklyn or the next Bobcats. There's always some, or like Orlando, there's always some team that has some disgruntled superstar or some soon-to-be free agent superstar that is willing to give you all kinds of assets or figure out some way to give you all kinds of assets to get your guy who might help keep that person around.
Yeah, yeah. It was just a rumor, but I actually talked to my guy yesterday, and Golden State actually did offer Cleveland number 7 for number 24 and Anderson Varejão, and Cleveland turned that down. And Varejão is a guy that, like Gordon, has been injured the last couple of years, and
There's
always going to be some team that sees value in a guy. I don't get it, but
really? That surprises me.
Yeah, it shocks the heck out of me.
Maybe they think that's just too many young kids on the team, but
I don't.
I mean, Barnes, that'd be...
Yeah, would you rather have Barnes or Zeller and Verja? I mean, I don't know. But okay, so personally, the Ryan Anderson has changed things for me. If you would have talked to me 24 hours ago, I would have put it at 75% the Hornets work a sign and trade. Now I'm down to about 5%, if that.
Yep.
I don't know what your number is, but before we get to your number, what... Let's say Monty and Dell sit down with Eric Gordon. They actually explain to him how this process works without his people, as you call it, in the room influencing him. And, you know, the Hornets match the offer. What do you think has to be done to repair this? Again, not just with fans, because fans are going to be, you know, won over the first day Eric Gordon hits a game-winning shot, but just – overall, within the organization, the culture of the team, the, you know, the comments that Gordon said about why are you drafting Austin Rivers and now he's going to have to go to training camp with that guy, you know, what has to be done if the Hornets do what I now expect them to do and match Eric Gordon and he's a part of this team next year?
Honestly, and maybe this is just me, I'd ignore it. I'd bring him into camp and try to just get them working together and ignore what went on. I mean, Monty's doing that. I mean, he's not ignoring it, but he's addressing it as, yeah, people say dumb stuff. We got to give him a break and move on. He's a nice kid. We love him. And that's pretty much all you do. You let all that stuff work out. And when you start doing two-a-days and everybody's exhausted and try to bring them together that way. Do you think that, like, he's got to do some sort of Phil Jackson mumbo-jumbo and pull out, like, books that each of them have to read that will give them deeper insight into themselves?
No, I just think something has to be done. Some kind of trust building has to be done long term. I mean, like I said,
should they go to like a forest and then fall into each other's arms?
No, I mean, it's just you've heard from people who aren't even Hornets, you know, other coaches around the league, people in the media, people who are former Hornets, people who are current Hornets, who basically just praise the heck out of Monty Williams and Dell Demps. And Eric Gordon does exactly the opposite. I've never heard him say anything that leads me to believe that he has any faith in these two guys. I think everything I've ever got from every vibe has been completely egocentric. You know, he sold out the University of Illinois and basically ditched them for Indiana. He threw a hissy fit when Blake was becoming the star with the Clippers. Now this happens and the Hornets didn't buy him enough ice cream, but, you know, Phoenix had their employees waving their pom-poms when he came and visited. I think that something needs to be done to educate this young man that he's a great basketball player, but just as good as he is as a basketball player, he has to trust that his coach is a good coach, his GM is a good GM, and focus on his job. To me, that would be my number one objective in the offseason.
I don't know if addressing something like that head-on really helps anything, though. I mean, other than say something like, well, we've got to get past that. I mean, I really don't think that it's going to necessarily help anything. And the good news is, you know, every team is allowed to have one head case. What if Eric Gordon's our head case? I mean, you can get by with one. So we just don't trade for Tyreek Evans or DeMarcus Cousins or something like that.
Yeah, I always think that you could get by one. If Dennis Rodman is your third best player, you're fine.
Right.
If he's your best player, if he's your oldest player, you know, as far as all your good players, you're in trouble. That's always been my point. If Anthony Davis was 23 and Eric Gordon was some young hotshot who had all these idiotic ideas, I would have no problem whatsoever. I have never seen it work in reverse.
Well, we'll see. And think of it this way. Anthony Davis, when he's 23, that'll be the end of Eric Gordon's contract. So if it doesn't work out, we still got a long ways to go with Anthony Davis.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to those. Well, actually, and this is the other thing with the Hornets, you know, allowing Phoenix to dictate the process, is it looks like Phoenix is actually going to make that fourth year a player option year.
Yeah.
So that gives Gordon a little bit more power than maybe he would have got if the Hornets would have just done this earlier and it just been a 4 for 58 straight. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I guess your gut feeling, like I said, I put it at about 95% that I think the Hornets just match and actually try to give it the old college try and just make the best effort and with Gordon on this team, try to repair the situation. What are your odds as of today?
I agree that it's closer to 100% chance they match and hold on to him. I don't see them making a trade with Phoenix at all. I think that with the signing of Ryan Anderson, nothing has been more explicit or obvious to me than that the Hornets are trying to make a go of becoming semi-respectable right away. I mean, it's not something that should surprise us because the Hornets tried to make the Lakers trade and stay respectable. So they're not on the Oklahoma City plan. They're on the I've got a superstar, let's roll now plan, which, I mean, may or may not work. We'll see how that ends up. They're not throwing stupid contracts around, so I'm comfortable with it so far. If they can turn Jarrett Jack into some sort of reasonably decent small forward and, you know, find, you know, a decent point guard, you know, to replace him with, I think they're actually in pretty decent shape to be last year's Minnesota Timberwolves team.
Yeah, I disagree. I think Jarrett Jack, if he was 99% to be on this team, a week ago, he's 100% now.
You think so?
Oh, there's no way that you could let your leader go now. Not with this jerk on the roster. So,
you're killing him.
Oh, my God. He's just he's 23 years old. I was a bigger idiot when I was 23, so I should stop doing it. Again, it's not as a person thing. It's just there's no way I want this guy to be the leader of my team. So, to me, Jack is on this team no matter what, which I guess kind of brings me to my last question. Ryan Anderson signed. We both believe Eric Gordon's going to be back. Anthony Davis was, by everybody outside of one or two people's accounts, the best rookie in this draft by far and one of the best in the last 10 years. With a couple more moves being made, what is the ceiling for this team this year?
35 wins.
That's the ceiling?
I don't see them getting more than that.
Wow.
So, I mean, the way I look at
two games this year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So no chance. There's nothing they could do, and they'll be a playoff team this year.
Well, I mean, if they trade for another impact player at small four, they have three positions locked up. They have two that are gaping holes, in my opinion. So, I mean, if they can fill one of those holes with somebody who's pretty good, then yeah, playoffs. But, I mean, the way I look at it is, if you're counting that they play most of the season, I expect Eric Gordon, Anthony Davis, and Ryan Anderson to both be, you know, and Anthony Davis will probably be worth more than this in the future, but for his rookie season, I expect them to be worth about 9 to 10 wins apiece, which only gets you to 27, and if you throw the rest of the team in there and they're okay, if you get another 9 out of them, you're feeling pretty good. You're only at 35. Just, I mean, that's, I'd have to, until I can see Anthony Davis and his actual impact, I'm not willing to give him more than impact than that. I mean, the last guy the Hornets had who did a bigger impact than that was Chris Paul. But saying Anthony Davis is going to be Chris Paul is a huge thing, because you got to remember, Chris Paul put up one of the best rookie seasons as a guard since Michael Jordan ever. I mean, he was that efficient. He was that good. And to say Anthony Davis is going to do that in his first year when he's a big man, and big men don't necessarily do that at 19, I think that's a big statement. I'm not willing to make that. I mean, even saying a guy's worth 10, that's, I mean, an average player in a normal season is worth about 5 wins. So I'm saying Anthony Davis is twice as good as a normal player, an average NBA player. Yeah. I don't know. So obviously you disagree. What is your ceiling? 70 wins?
No, I honestly think with a couple more moves, none of them major, their ceiling is second place in the Southwest. Probably a 7th seed.
So really, you think they're going to take both Memphis? They'll be behind both Memphis and the Spurs.
I think they could. I think with the right moves, they could be. Have a better regular season than Memphis next year, yes.
Yeah, wow, you think they're going to take Memphis. Oof.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know.
I see the same thing with Memphis that I saw with the Hornets, where they were supposed to be the next young team. They became a little too fat, satisfied, rested on their didn't really play as hard as they could in the regular season, just waited for the playoffs. I could see the Hornets being that hungry team that plays absolutely hard every night, the first season of Scott Skiles type of team.
Right.
I'm talking minor moves. Like, you say that you think Jack will be traded. I personally think Vasquez is being traded. And I'm talking about a move like, I go to Golden State. I want a different kind of player at small forward in case Aminu doesn't work out, or even if he does, he's just my defensive guy. Would you do Vasquez if you're the Hornets? And I'm Dell Demps. I tell you, we're not trading Jared Jacks, so stop trying. Would you do Vasquez for Darrell Wright and Charles Jenkins?
For both those guys? Absolutely.
Okay.
I love Darrell Wright. I wouldn't even need Charles Jenkins.
Just to give me my backup point guard, but yeah, Golden State doesn't love Wright anymore, and trying to bring Rush back, they're going to have almost no room for Wright. So to me, if the Hornets do something like that and then bring back Carl Landry and go get me a minimum contract big guy, I could see a team like that being a 45-win team, second place in the Southwest type of team, you know, that's just defense every night. So I think that they have a fairly high ceiling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not willing to buy it yet. Let me see the few games, and then I'll see how they show for me. I mean, there's not a huge difference between 35 and 45.
Yeah, I guess the difference between those two numbers are it comes down to luck,
right,
and health. So.
So you've brought up Aminu. There is some news. He just led Nigeria to the Olympics.
Yeah, him and Ike Diago, yeah.
Yeah, so any reconsideration on Aminu as part of the future of this team as a dominant small forward, crushing all comers, leading the team?
No more than I think Ike Diago will have the same possibility.
You kind of murdered me for my post earlier this week. So I got to call you out on this one. This is my attack on you. You basically, you know, were saying that I was. Other people were saying this too. I can't actually just take you out. That somehow I was like considering Aminu to be like a great basketball player. Did I really say that? Because I don't think I did. I was pretty sure I was just saying that we're not going to miss Ariza, who's a lousy basketball player, because Aminu is a slightly less lousy basketball player.
Yeah, but I think the difference in offense is more than slightly. Especially, I mean, I think Ariza is not a good offensive player, but I think
he's terrible.
I think he's far better than Aminu from the eye test perspective.
I've always said back and forth with you that I think Ariza makes the correct decision 95% of the time, but he can't complete any of it. So what's really the difference?
I mean, I watched Trevor Ariza's offense help the Hornets win a playoff game against the Lakers. Aminu couldn't do that in a million years. I will agree that on Ariza's bad nights, that he could look as bad as Aminu. I mean, I remember, wasn't there a game against Washington? He was like 0-13. Remember when he had that slump? But
yeah.
On Ariza's good nights, Aminu has never been that, or even close to that in his life. So if you just want to isolate Ariza's bad nights, that's fine. But if you want to talk about their ceilings as offensive players, I mean, wasn't there a game against Detroit where Ariza went off for like 30-something and you and I were laughing because it was a Sunday and we had the podcast that day? And, of course, Ariza goes off for 30-something that in six games. So I think you even have to admit that at their best, Ariza is by, you know, on his best night is actually a capable NBA offensive player, where Aminu has never shown that. But no, my thing with Aminu is that if he could accept a role, you know, the way that guys just go to San Antonio and accept a role where Popovich basically says, you stink at this, this, and this. I need you to do two things for me. Can you do that? You know, the Danny Greens of the world say, yes, coach, I can. The Glenn Big Dog Robinsons of the world have an ego and say, no, I'm going to do what I want to do, and they get set on the bench. To me, if Al-Farouq Aminu could become the Danny Green, I think he has a place on this team. I don't think that he has the kind of mentality to admit that he stinks at so many other things and just do the two things that he does really well and keep his mouth shut and not ask for anything more.
Yeah. I don't know. My ultimate evaluation of those two players is Ariza is a 27-year-old D-plus player who's not changing, and Aminu is a 22-year-old D player who wouldn't surprise me at all if he ended up as C or C-plus. And I'd much rather have Aminu.
Yeah.
And we're not going to miss Ariza at all.
And to me, it all comes down to the mental part, which could never be quantified by your numbers. And to me, that's where I always fall in the NBA.
See, but mental, I mean, he just took Nigeria to the Olympics. I mean, he's growing as a leader.
Well,
leaps and bounds before our very eyes.
We'll see if that comes back and translates. Nothing would make me happier because, as I've said, the small forward market in the NBA is horrible. And
right.
Whenever there's a decent small forward on the market, they get paid the way that Gerald Wallace, you know, Danny Granger, and Jeff Green got paid. So I pray
getting paid.
I pray that Aminu is the answer at small forward because there's really no other options. I just haven't seen anything in the mental makeup, him being humble enough, him being, you know, the ability to just, why not become a cross between Bruce Bowen and Andre Kirilenko? Stop drifting out to the perimeter. Stop, you know, worrying about doing anything else. Lock down the man in front of you and take 500 corner threes every day in practice.
All right.
Can he do that? So,
well, so here's a, I just want to, before we bring this to a halt, I do want to point out, you know what my favorite thing about this offseason has been with the Hornets?
Talking to me?
Well, of course, talking to you. Okay, second favorite thing is reading. I love John Hollinger, ESPN.com. I mean, that should be obvious. All the little digs, every probably like 10th tweet that Hollinger puts out there, he digs at Washington about trading for Okafor. Like today when Ryan Anderson trade was announced, he's like, hey, Washington, I'm sure you're happy paying Okafor $13 million this year instead of just, oh, I don't know, trading for Ryan Anderson. He does it all the time. Every time there's like a trade, he makes a dig at Washington. Hey, I'm sure you're going to love Ariza when you could have done this.
Yep. So, yeah, it's good not to be the butt of those jokes.
Oh, yeah, it's so free. It's so, yeah, it's freedom not having Okafor and Ariza's contracts on our books. We'll see what the stupid contract we end up giving out to somebody who will smart under the next 10 years. But,
well,
I don't know, maybe we won't. Maybe in Dell we should trust.
Yeah, I have faith that Ryan Anderson will not be the contract that we are cursing 2, 3, 4 years from now.
It's perfectly reasonable contract.
Yeah, and the right type of guy to give it to. So.
Yeah. All right, so you got anything else?
That's about it. I think we'll be on this podcast. We might do one early, but if we do one same bat time, same bat channel next week, the Eric Gordon situation will be resolved. Or actually, with our luck, the Hornets will probably match, but then there'll be rumors of them looking to trade him, but that won't be able to happen for a couple more months. So we'll just have to go through this agonizing torture for a couple more months, but I'm hoping that by our next podcast, this Eric Gordon situation is completely resolved. And also, you know, the Hornets make a couple more moves before then, as I tweeted out and tried to explain a little bit earlier in the podcast. Basically, the Hornets have a 3-day window where, you know, Eric Gordon's cap hold is $9.1 million, or somewhere around there, $9.5 million, I'm sorry. But the first year of his contract, if the Hornets match, will be closer to 14. So if you just think about it that way, the Hornets will have an extra $4 million before they match to make a couple more moves. So I would fully expect that if the Hornets are going to be more active in this free agency period, that we might see a small flurry of moves before they're forced to match that Eric Gordon contract on the 14th. So I guess long story short, I think a week from today, we'll have a couple of new players to be talking about.
All right, which is all exciting. So thanks, everyone, for listening to In the Know. And for those of you keeping score, Michael McNamara hates Eric Gordon, and I'm creating I'm redoing my guest room so that Eric Gordon can come live in my house with me because I love him so much.
Sorry, Eric, if you're listening.
Have a good night. In the party town, ain't nothing but a party. Down by New Orleans, the land of redskins, slotty machine, voodoo queen, voodoo queen.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network.
Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.